Hello, this is Tamiko Faison, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to supporting and showcasing therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world. Today, my guest is Dr. Dougleen Jackson, PhD, OTRL, LMT, ATP. We're going to get to what those initials mean in a few minutes. She is a consultant, occupational therapist, an assistive technology professional with over 20 years of experience in the rehab and education fields. She holds a PhD in special education in early childhood, a master's degree in occupational therapy, a bachelor's degree in rehab services with a concentration in counseling, and a diploma in massage therapy. She has also obtained numerous certifications and is an active member of several professional associations and executive boards. Dr. Jackson has interest and expertise in program development, health and education equity, telehealth, assistive technology, early intervention, autism, mental health, evidence-based practice, and intervention services for various disabilities across the lifespan. She is a leader, a speaker, an advocate, an educator, a scholar, and a consultant with international experience. Dr. Jackson excels at developing people and programs through creating simplified curricula and content, as well as providing innovative and effective interventions and solutions to clients. So I'm just going to say right here, don't ever contact me and say, Tamiko, you're doing a lot of different things, because I'm trying to keep up with Dr. Dougleen Jackson. Dr. Dougleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me as your guest.
I'm excited. I'm on social media, and I really enjoy that I get to meet and see different people. And I first saw you on LinkedIn, and you would post these pictures of yourself and several, I don't know how many, but it was probably the most Black OTs I've seen together ever in my life. And you would put the hashtag chocolate OTs. And I was like, wow, where is she? How is she bringing all these OTs together outside of like a professional, like the AOTA conference or something like that? So I am just thrilled that you have made time in your schedule to be part of this podcast. So if you can tell me, Inquiring Minds wants to know, how did you get all these African-American OTs together, but also to tell us in your own words about yourself?
Yes, well, about me, I am first generation born here in the U.S. My family's from Jamaica, and I knew I always wanted to be in healthcare, but I didn't know in what aspect. And the strangest part is that I was growing up and was like, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a this. I want to be a that. And I finally settled that I'm going to be a PT. Now, when I went to University of Florida, that's where I did my undergrad at, and it was quite the experience. I was an athlete at the time, and I knew I didn't want to do the traditional majors that a lot of athletes go for, because it's hard to do something in the medical field with all those other requirements as an athlete. And I'm wandering around the halls, found an OT who was like, what are you doing on this floor? And I said, I'm trying to find a PT to figure out what it takes to be a PT. And she looked at me, and I'm still in contact with her today, and she was a Black OT. So it was nice to see that representation, but that honestly wasn't what I was looking for at the forefront of my experience in that day and moment. I wanted to be a PT. And she says, look at your frame. Do you want to lift patients your whole life? 300-pound patients? I'm like, no. She's like, because you want to be an OT. And that started my OT journey right there. And she raised the bar very high for me right out the gate. This was before we were entry-level masters. And she's like, but you don't want to do your bachelor's in OT. You instead want to have a master's in OT. And this was in probably 96. Because by 2007, you'll need to have a master's, and I'm sure you're going to go far beyond that. So I've always had expectations from others that I was going to be a lot. And I always knew in myself that I wanted to do a lot. So that's why when you read my CV and my bios and things like that, people are like, oh my gosh, you just do so much. But I do it because that's just who I am naturally. And I also want to bring others along. So when you say, how do I convene all these chocolate OTs? I am intentional, and it's something that I've pointed out to different professional associations, especially in this day and age, and the things that we are not only dealing with, but what are at the forefront because they've been there for a while. We have to be intentional in making sure we represent first and foremost, and also continue to bring others along so that they can show how we shine.
That's really interesting how you said you ran into an OT, a Black OT, and she just immediately took you under her wing, didn't know you from, I never met you before, but was intentional about encouraging and supporting you, and that has made an impact on your entire career.
Yeah, it has, because I was following the traditional processes of, okay, I'm going to academic advising, I'm doing all the career assessments and seeing where I land, and my undergrad has a concentration in counseling, so I knew I was going to be helping people, but she just put it into another perspective that you don't have to follow the traditional careers, and she was just so giving of herself in that moment that it gave me all I needed. And people think that mentorship means, oh, you have to put your all in all into everything. Just that one glimmer of hope, that one nugget of information can be enough to change the trajectory of someone's life. So yeah, I saw a Black OT in that moment, and that wasn't what I was thinking, but the more I'm in my field, the more I realize that we are unicorns.
That is you know, awesome to hear. And if you are listening and you are in academia, or you are in a space where there are not a lot of minorities, representation matters. You know, this is a perfect example of how important representation is. And what you said about being intentional, you know, you said they don't just come together, you know, this is not magic. You are strategic and intentional about bringing them together. Can you provide some more information about how you are strategic and intentional, or elaborate on that?
Yeah, how I am strategic is that, I've said this on other calls too, but when I go out into different spaces, I'm always mindful that others are watching. And I know that I have this wow factor about me that people always inquire about, and that representation piece, it is key. So when I see little girls, little boys who look like me, I'm sure to drop a nugget and drop a seed. So starting early, starting young, and not that they need to emulate or be like me, but to know that they are enough, that they don't need to adopt the narratives of the imposter syndrome, which I don't even speak those words because that's not a narrative we need to even bring towards us. We got enough going on. But in being intentional, it starts with grooming people from their young. If you're in a leadership position, it comes with being mindful of your role and how you can create opportunities for others. So that intentionality and being strategic is key. It has to be at your forefront. It's not to be taken as though you're spinning off of affirmative action, which is what a lot of people thought was how Blacks got into different positions of leadership or even programs, but being intentional and knowing that you can pave the way for somebody else as well. And that's what I do in everything.
I believe it. So this wow factor has you, you know, with this dynamic bio in multiple, I think, entrepreneurial and leadership endeavors. Can you talk about those?
Yes. Right now, I am the current president of the Florida Occupational Therapy Association. I sit on several boards as well. I'm on the panel of professional advisors for the Autism Society. I volunteer my time a lot, and I just like to keep active. I went for my PhD because I have a passion in research. So in addition to my primary role with the company I'm with now, I also have my own entrepreneurial endeavors and my foot in other doors. So I love research. And in order to do research, I've always thought, oh, well, you have to be either at a hospital, at an academic institution, something like that in order to engage in research. But in the process of completing my PhD, I realized that I'm more so a community-based researcher. So I do keep my foot in the door, serving on boards and committees and working maybe part-time somewhere just so I can have those affiliations. So that works towards my benefit. But as far as my entrepreneurial endeavors, I'm starting to provide continuing education because I've always been to many events and I'm a lifelong learner. And I don't see a lot of us up there. So it goes back to my intentionality and me bringing along the next generation. All my friends are telling me that if you hang around Doug Lean, you're going to get yourself involved in some stuff. It's going to be good stuff for you personally as well as professionally. So my entrepreneurial endeavors are right now rebranding my therapy service and advocacy business to being so much more. So I've recently changed the name to Gifts Institute because I've always said I wanted to have my own school, my own academy, my own something that I can continue to groom others in their lifelong learning process, but also hang on to my clinical skills because that's my joy in making a difference in even one life and empowering them to be the best that they can be. So in addition to serving in leadership positions, I do have my own entrepreneurial endeavors with a global spin on it because I'm not just held to my locale. I love international work. It invigorates me and I continue to find ways to connect internationally as well as make my business span there too.
Now, the point you made about not seeing us up there is very true because I think that there are OTs in these leadership positions, but we don't always see them. So I really appreciate that you showcase, but I also appreciate that I've been seeing you lately in other groups providing continuing education. More recently, I think it was a telehealth group that I saw you providing some continuing education in, and then you want to have a school too. So yes, this is this wow factor really showing up in this, in this interview. And I have no doubt that you will make that happen.
Yes. It's all about giving back and knowing that your time here on earth is limited and you need to maximize those moments. So I'm always hearing, oh, you're doing too much. You're doing too much. And my mindset is tomorrow's not promised to you. I had my, life check when I turned 28 and was dealing with autoimmune issues, which they just keep popping up left and right, but I still keep going. So when people are like, what is that hashtag about great with graves, track the storm, all those things. And I'm like, that's me, because if you don't know me personally, you don't know my challenges. You just see all the great things that I do and my lovely sunrises because that's my self-care. But some days it's a struggle, but I still have my goals and I still have my dreams and aspirations and I go after them.
I was going to ask that about the track the storm, and I see you at the water a lot, and I'm glad you brought that up. So what else do you do to have balance with you doing lots of different things? How do you make sure, you know, besides the sunrise and the water, are there other things that you do?
Yes, I love to travel. So in this current day and age, I am struggling with that regard. But I make time to be out in nature because that's what grounds me. Being out in nature, be it at the beach, be it in the forest, at a waterfall. Water is my thing, though. And just connecting with nature helps recharge me. It's my self-care, my personal self-care. I enjoy going to different countries, seeing different things. Carnival is my other thing that I love. So people see me in feathers at a Caribbean carnival somewhere because it's my way to connect with all my friends in one place. Otherwise, I have to go to many different states and countries to see them all. So carnival is my other outlet. But beyond that, having my network of friends who I can call up and we can go hang out if I choose to. I'm very much an introvert at heart. I'm a selective extrovert. So having that me time, being sociable when I want to, being intentional about practicing self-care and traveling, because life is about balance. No one's going to give it to you. You have to carve that out for yourself.
Very true. Good, all good points. Now, I have not seen your picture with the feathers, so I'm going to look for that.
Look for social media platforms, but they're all under Doug Lean, so it's not hidden. I show the true nature of me in all aspects. With COVID-19 and the quarantine, we had a virtual carnival for Jamaica, and I even put on my feathers and everything, and my friends are like, she is really dressed up in her house running around like she's at carnival. I'm like, yes, I turned on my reggae and my disco because music makes my world go around too.
Yeah. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I want to go back just a minute to what you said about how people come to you and say, you're doing a lot of different things. I'm just curious, is that something you did, you know, when you were younger, or is that something that just evolved as you got more involved in your career and saw that you enjoy doing a lot of different things? I definitely can relate to that because I work with lots of different populations. I love entrepreneurship. I love educating. And for me, that's just the way it has been. I remember going to OT school and they said, you can't work. I remember, you know, being told that when you apply to the program, it's very demanding, you can't work. And I worked sometimes 2 and 3 jobs, and I made it happen. But I had a strong work ethic from when I was really young. So I'm curious, was there something in your childhood or before you even became an OT that sparked your ability to be able to handle multiple roles?
I think I pride my upbringing in that because my mom was a single parent, but I had a extended family around me all the time. So anything I wanted to do that was productive and constructive, I was encouraged to do. So I played every sport possible once I got to middle school. Once I got to high school, I had to specialize. I was a straight A student also, so engaged in many academic endeavors, leadership opportunities from early on too. I was placed and gifted from first grade, so I'm used to being multiple spaces because I remember starting kindergarten and I was only 4. That was when the law had first changed and you had to be 5. And I was that behavioral problem, the smallest person with the biggest mouth, chastising all the children, telling them they're babies because they didn't know how to read and why they doing baby work. And they're like, that's why you come to kindergarten. So I would get in trouble and they told my mom that she can't be here. And my mom's like, her preschool will not take her back. So unless she consented to a psychological evaluation, they weren't letting me back in, which they tested me. I was like, oh, she's gifted. She's got a very high IQ and you need to keep her active and busy. So I think that's where that might have came from, is that if my mind is not engaged, then who knows what I'm going to get into. Thankfully, I never got into any trouble. But I think that goes back to my upbringing and my mom affording me those opportunities to do a lot because I wanted to do a lot. She never forced me or pressured me to do anything. It was, do you want to? Sure. And that's what I would do.
And so would you say because you excelled academically going to college, that wasn't even a question because you said you're first generation, right?
Yes, first generation born here. My mom is a nurse, so she got her bachelor's in nursing. So she did go to college, and I've always seen her in school. I used to go to school with her sometimes. She'd take me and to different events, and I remember being at the park, and everyone's playing, and I'm sitting there indulging in her nursing books. And they're like, that's not normal. But I've always had a desire to learn, and college was a definite next path for me. I used to tell her, I'm running far away. I'm not staying anywhere near you guys. Mind you, I graduated high school at 17, so I was still a minor. So going away far, I was recruited from many places athletically as well as academically and chose to stay in Florida because, as I say, the beach is my happy place and I need to stay grounded and connected. And I've learned I just need access. But yes, academics has always been easy for me. I've got a photographic memory, audiographic too. That's a little delayed sometimes. But I love learning, and college was definitely a path for me. When I went and started my PhD program, they're like, you're going to get a PhD too? I'm like, yeah. When I finished my bachelor's, I had 9 months off before my OT program. I'm like, oh, I'm bored. I'll go enroll in the military. Did my ASVAB, got a 99, then decided, nope, I don't want to go away. I'm going to massage school. And they're like, she is just everywhere. But it's all connected. It's all in wanting to learn, wanting to help people, and wanting to do more for the greater good of society. So academics has gotten me there. Now it's time to engage in more entrepreneurial endeavors so that I can monetize all my knowledge and skills.
like that you said that it's all for the greater good of society, because people sometimes don't understand that. You know, they're just looking at that, why are you doing so much? And it seems to bother some people for whatever reason. But it sounds like that you have, you know, got that under control and are continuing to soar with the ultimate goal of the greater good of society, because that's what it really is all about. Now, our profession is, this is the latest statistic that I'm aware of, 4% African-American. How has that impacted your entrepreneurial and leadership roles?
Oh, wow. I would just have to reflect back professionally on some of the challenges that I've had and be thankful that it's never erred my footing or drive to want to be in leadership. I can tell you many stories, and if people have been on some of the other social equity and diversity and inclusion calls, they'll hear some of those things where I've been to jobs where in the school setting, I worked in the school setting for a while, and they would stop an IEP because they've flown in their specialists and I'm challenging their recommendations, and they want to pause the IEP to request my resume. Where is her resume and why is she here? Who is she? I've been uninvited from meetings because of who I am. I've changed jobs within a state system to a different county where they tried to adjust my pay grade. And when I went to challenge it, oh, you're being combative and we don't know why we even pay you that much anyways. And just the color of my skin has been a barrier for some, but not a barrier for me, because above all else, my skills speak for who I am and what I am capable of doing. And even in some of my performance reviews, I remember one of my first jobs, I met with my boss towards the end of the year, and they're like, you may be our best clinician, our highest qualified clinician, but you will never be anything other than a treating clinician.
Oh,
won't be a diagnostician, nothing like that. So just know where your place is. And in hearing that, that gives more fuel to me to step out into entrepreneurialism. But I've always felt I needed to get a few more skills here, learn a little bit more here. And that's sometimes my roadblock. But going forward and realizing that you can still stay connected, you just need to be strategic and intentional about what roles and positions you accept and whether they align up with your end game and goal and vision. So as far as my leadership positions, I don't think it's been a challenge more so in that respect. If anything, my reputation speaks for me. So that's what gets me through the door. But I also do need to be mindful that if I wasn't as credentialed as I am, I don't even think I'd be invited to the table. Because I still hear the stories when I get there that, oh, you're doing too much. I remember before I even completed my PhD, someone who was mentoring me at my job said, oh, wow, you're doing more with your degree that you don't even have yet than I've done with mine, and I've had it. I've got to slow you down.
Wow.
So it's always roadblocks in the way, that glass ceiling and brick wall around you to get in your box is oftentimes there, but I bulldoze straight through those. I do. And I adopted the motto that they may invite you to the table, but you're still not able to eat, and they expect you to serve. So instead, why not create your own table? And that's what I do when I bring others along. I show them the way. I have no issue with giving secrets and telling them, this is what you need to do. Do with it what you want, but no need to make the same mistakes or deal with the same barriers that I have. Here's how you navigate around them. So I believe in building my own table and bringing others along to dine, not just serve at it.
That's great. You know, creating your own table. I consult with therapists who want to start businesses, and most of them are therapists of color who are wanting to create their own table because of similar experiences that you just expressed. But, you know, you have you're very confident, and you can hear it in your responses. You know, you talked about the autoimmune disease that you've dealt with. You talked about, you know, people telling you, stay in your place, Doug Lean, or, you know, you can't get further than I am, but it does not stop you. And you even mentioned earlier, you know, the imposter syndrome and not to speak that. And I will admit that I've struggled with that in the past. And I'm wondering, where does that confidence come from, where no matter what is happening or going on or what someone is speaking that you're like, you know, get out of my way. No, you're not going to stop me.
It's my upbringing. I have to attribute it back to my upbringing because I was never told that I can't do anything. I was always told, if that's what you want to do, here's what it's going to take to get to it. And with hard work and determination, you can do it. Yes, you're going to face barriers. Yes, you're going to face challenges. But if that's what you truly want to do and it's not harming anybody in the process, go for it.
So no matter what other people said to you, you would always go back to what you remember your mom or your extended family instilled in you.
Right. And it's not about proving somebody wrong. It's just about, this is what I want to do and I'm going to do it. And I'm prayerful in that. And if it's my path and if it's something that I should be doing, then I'm blessed to go forth with it.
That is awesome. That is awesome. I think in previous conversation, I don't know if you've listened to any of the other podcasts where we've talked about, we still step forward, but sometimes those thoughts will come in and try to hold you back. And we just recognize that this, you know, this feeling is real, but the thoughts are not accurate.
It's true. And I do a lot of stuff in the wellness space because I'm also a massage therapist. And when I say do a lot of stuff, a lot of it is for me. Because if I'm not right, then I'm not able to serve. I'm not able to be my best authentic self. So it's funny to me how right before or during a life challenge, I find different aspects of wellness that I engage in. Like I personally do Qigong. I engage in meditation, mindfulness practices, things like that. And I learn about them and I practice them and I share them with others. And that's another tool that I use to, as you say, you may go in those spaces, but you have to acknowledge those emotions. You have to acknowledge those feelings and be compassionate towards yourself. We are so giving and forgiving of others, but do we reflect that same energy and practice back to ourselves? So I've learned to be a lot more intentional in that. You may lose a lot of friends and family along the way because they may tell you, oh, you're being selfish. Oh, you're being this or that. But that's their reality and they're fine to feel or think that way, but in the end, you answer to you. You have to go back and see, are you being true to yourself? And you, above all else, you have to be kind to yourself. And it's not selfish.
Right, right. I think about the, you know, when you're on the plane and they say, put your mask on first because you can't help anybody else if you haven't helped yourself.
Definitely. Yep. And I've learned that the hard way because that spoon theory is real. I've been telling everybody about spoon theory and they're like, what is that? Someone who had MS, they talk about how you wake up and maybe you have X amount of spoons. Depending on how you're feeling, it may take you 10 spoons and you still haven't made it out the door and it's only 10 o'clock, but you still have to make it throughout the day. Well, I used to ascribe the spoon theory till I realized that because of who I am and my color, because health disparities are real. No matter how educated you are, no matter how degreed and credentialed you are, you still can't rise above a system that doesn't acknowledge your challenges and issues beyond what they read in the textbook. So I developed my own saying, I have sporks, forget spoons. I've had to get some sporks. So it's a spoon and a fork all in one. And that's what helps me get through everything.
Wow, I like that. I like that. So you've given some advice already, but what other advice would you give for therapists of color seeking to go into entrepreneurial and leadership positions?
I think we need to learn to support each other. So find yourself a support network of authentic individuals who aren't trying to compete with you or bring you down, because we know that happens amongst us. But instead, find you a support network of like-minded individuals who can help you get to that next level and you can help them get there too, because it's about reciprocity. So that's one of the biggest things I can say is to find your support. I have my WhatsApp chat with two of my good friends, my OT sister peeps, because they're also OTs. And they check me when I'm out of line. They encourage me when I need a little bit of encouragement. And they're there for me. And we're there for each other. I also have my other circle of friends who they come to me for advice. I come to them for advice. We encourage each other and challenge each other to do more and be more. So it's nice to have those spaces and also your friends who will let you have your pity party for a moment, but won't let you stay there. So that's key.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think, you know, having that having support network makes a huge difference in being able to get through some of these challenges, but also having people, like you said, who will check you and they will allow you to, you know, have a small pity party, but you can't get stuck. They let you know, like, you're not going to play victim, and that you need to be, you know, proactive in terms of pulling yourself up out of situations that may seem challenging for you.
Yeah, you have to acknowledge where you're at. You have to process those feelings, those emotions, because they're real. You can't deny them. And then move beyond it. So that's why I was saying I don't ascribe to that imposter syndrome. And people invite me to speak on it. I'm like, I can't, because I don't believe in it. Mm. It's you being put in a position where you're competent and others making you to feel that you are not. So encouragement is key. Finding those people you can bounce ideas off of who can also be true. And let you know when you're out of line and help you get back in line. So balance. It's that balance again, too. You don't always need a cheerleader.
Right. And sometimes you need to get checked. So that's why, you know, when, again, talking about the imposter syndrome, when you get checked by someone, you realize it's the thoughts are irrational and not true. So what's next for you, Dr. Dugaleen?
What is next for me? I am looking to get back to doing research. And that's why I'm rebranding my business. So rather than being it focused solely on therapy services, because that's what it was, GIFTS, Global Interventions for Therapy Services, it's morphed into now GIFTS Institute. So I am building that out. As I said, it's going to have continuing education. I've put in to get credentialed for that because, yes, we like to take classes, but we also want to get our CEs for it if we can. Although we need to be mindful that everything you pay for doesn't need to give you CEs as long as it's giving you value for what you are paying for. Also, I am looking to further my interventions on an international level, hence telehealth. I recently completed my board certification as a telehealth specialist. So that was something that I just added, more alphabet soup, as everybody call it. They're like, if you ever signed all your credentials, I'm like, I know, I just don't. But always learning, because I want to be the best professional that I can be. I want to help continue to mold other professionals to be the best that they can be, which is why I was in academia for a little while. I went to open a university, was there for a few years, and then decided that I can serve more by being unaffiliated full-time with the university. So doing a lot more things for my business is what's next for me. Building out my entrepreneurial endeavors to provide services, to provide trainings, to provide interventions that are evidence-based, that are quality, and to continue to build that evidence base for our profession through research.
Well, congratulations on the telehealth credential, because it's not going anywhere. I've heard lots of conversation about, you know, we're supposed to be in person with people, and that's why I went to OT school. And I'm just going, you know, sort of like what you said earlier, you have to be able to embrace and deal with change. And it can be a challenge to provide telehealth services if you're used to doing all your services in person, but it's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. And it's great to see you leading in that space. And you said, you know, if you ever sign all your initials, you know, I think it'd be like a paragraph, right? But I'm curious, like, what is the LMT and the ATP that are after your name on your profile?
Okay, so the LMT is for licensed massage therapist, because I still hold my, I've been a licensed massage therapist since 1999. And I still do some work. A lot of people are like, oh, I didn't know. I'm like, yeah, I have two tables, two chairs, all of that stuff. And when my best friend, he's a chiropractor, calls me up, I'll go help him out in a moment. Because when I'm needing some care, he's there for me. So it's nice to have that there. But I love massage. I love wellness. So that's why I keep the LMT there. And then the ATP is one of my true passions, is assistive technology. So I am an assistive technology professional. With my autoimmune issues, I am a user of technology. It took me a while to finish my PhD because at one point my vision was not where I needed it to be. I did not have great functional vision. I could see. Now I can go to all the optometrists I want and they're like, oh, but you have perfect 20/20 vision. But that's not always the case as an OT, we know when we talk about functional vision, I can look left, look right, and it might take me 5 seconds to reorient. Now, when I tell my doctors that, they're like, what are you talking about? I go do the visual field test. I ace them, everything like that. Went to the number one eye institute, saw 6 specialists in 2 days. And they're like, nothing's wrong with your eyes. I'm like, well, just give me a round of steroids because that's what I usually get. And they didn't want to. So I had to get my old records, bring it forward for them to then say, okay, we'll give it to you. And it fixes the problem. But I am a user of assistive technology when I am not at my best. So I am credentialed in that. I love AAC. I love incorporating assistive technology into all my interventions because it makes life so much easier. Even in my current role as an assessment consultant, I had a question yesterday. Hey, is this accessible? And what if someone wanted to proctor this assessment and needed to turn on accessibility features? Which would work? Which wouldn't? And that is my passion. I love creating. I love designing. I love adapting. And assistive technology allows me to do that for myself as well as for others as I serve.
That's great. I might have to call you after this interview, Douglene, because the majority of the people that my company serves, the clinical part is people who have low vision. And we certainly had some challenges with telehealth services for people with low vision diagnosis. I did not know that you had expertise in that area.
Yeah, a lot of people forget about disability. Everybody has the potential to be disabled at any point in their life. And being in the healthcare field, we're a bit more mindful of it. But when you're thrown in the trenches and still trying to be your awesome you, and you're having your own issues, you learn to adapt. And AT is the way to go. AT is something we all need to keep being mindful of. And I'm happy that technology is becoming so prevalent and easy to access, embedded through universal design and everything that we do. Imagine we weren't able to talk to our computers and tell it what to do. Now we're able to just say, hey, Google or Siri, and I hope none of them turn on right now as I say it, but they can help us out. That technology wasn't there. You pay bukus of bucks for that. So yeah. It's one of my passions, and it's a niche that I love working in.
That's awesome. How can we support you in your current and your future endeavors?
I think people can support me by, first and foremost, supporting others, right? That's something that's true to me. And when you think of what you want to leave as your legacy, I just want to leave the world a better place than what I found it. I just want others to continue to serve and give back to others. If you want to find me and support me, especially as I launch my continuing education classes, as I engage in more international endeavors, and once the world opens back up, I'd like to bring others along to serve in my Go Summits. So follow me on social media, on Instagram and Twitter. It's Dr. Douglene, D-R-D-O-U-G-L-E-N-E. On Facebook, you can find me as Douglene Jackson. And my websites are currently changing, but giftsinstitute.com, you can find me there. And I have a distinctive name, thankfully. So just look up Douglene, follow me, support my initiatives. I'll support you back because that's what we're here for. I'm working on a book as well. So as those come out, continue to gain your knowledge through that. Make referrals, as you said, for those who I can help. And I'm open to helping others too. So that's how I think others can support me.
Yeah, and you're back to what you said earlier about that reciprocity that you know, when I ask you what can we do for you, then you say what also you can continue to do for others. And it's a circle, you know, it's really the law of sowing and reaping. You know, as you give, it always comes back to you. Anything else that you would like the audience to know?
Let me think on that. I think we've covered a lot. But one thing I would like to offer is a bit of encouragement. Challenges are always going to be there. As I said, find your support network. Sometimes your support network might only just be you. But be intentional about taking care of you. Be intentional about the things that you engage in. Remember that you want to leave a mark on the world and hope that it's a positive mark. And go forth and just be your awesome you.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes your support network is you. You know, that reminds me of this is a gospel song. I don't know if you know it or not, but I may say the name wrong, but part of the lyrics is that sometimes you have to encourage yourself. That's what that made me think of when you just said sometimes your support network is you.
Yeah, it's true, though. It is. It's unfortunate because you like to see it other ways, but it's just you and the Lord at times. So, yeah.
Very, very true. Do you have a quote that you like to share, or do you want to leave with sometimes your support is you and leave a mark on the world?
I don't really have a favorite quote or anything. One of my friends, she has this thing on her fridge where she writes down the things that I say. She has these Dugleanisms because she says, you say the strangest things that come out of your mouth, but some of them are encouraging. Some of them are funny. What's in my spirit right now, if I were to offer anything to entrepreneurs and people looking to get into leadership, is to innovate, inspire, and follow your heart's desire. That's what's in my spirit right now.
I love that. Innovate, inspire, and follow your heart's desire. That is a good note to end on. Thank you so much, Dr. Dugleen, for sharing your time with us today and your knowledge and wisdom. And we will definitely be following you, looking for your books and your continuing education, and just watching you continue to make your mark on the world, as you said earlier. And that's our show. Don't forget to subscribe. Until next time.
Thank you.